Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
It's time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finlay. If you have a question for Graham, you can send it in to afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question is, why do we walk into a room and then forget why we went in there? Graham, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
So amazingly enough, the explanation for this is relatively simple, as you were saying.
It is relatively simple, and yet it shows you a lot about memory. So memory is very, very complicated. There are lots and lots of debates. There are all these different theories about memories, and maybe even more importantly, about forgetting. Forgetting is a very mysterious procedure, and clearly what people are concerned about. So you might think that memories are all about the context in which you remembered things, right? Or they might be, you know, if you've got something in your short-term memory, you should be able to remember it from one moment to the next.
Yeah.
But, and apparently this is frequent, it happens to me, but I thought it was just me, you walk to another room and you completely forget about why you walked into that other room.
Mm.
It turns out, and these people came up with a really, really great experiment to find out, that it's the doorway effect. Going through the doorway, they hypothesize, is the signal to you and your sort of visual stimulus that, you know, that event's over. It's an event boundary. And then you're in another event. You're in another story now.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And you take that old event and you sort of file it away for consolidation later because, you know, short-term memory can only be held for about 18 seconds. Right. And it takes a while to try and store that trace, which is a physical trace, you know, they think, in your neurons and synapses and indeed in the glial cells of your brain, which to put it into long-term memory, which, you know, can hold vast amounts of data, although not an unlimited amount, because it turns out, I mean, you think, you know, oh, I forgot my piano lessons, so because I could remember, you know, whatever happened in Game of Thrones, right? There is a bit of a case of that, you know, there are limits to how much you can store and how often you access.
Well, Homer Simpson always complained that, you know, if he learned new stuff, it would squeeze the old stuff out. So he was right.
Yep, noted brain scientist Homer Simpson. But what's great about this experiment is they got people to, first virtually in a really boring video game, much of psychology involves developing really boring video games, to go into a room, pick up a really badly rendered solid on a table, pick it up, and then it would disappear so you couldn't see it, so they could quiz them, and take it to another table and put it down and take up a different solid, right? Now, it made a big difference as to whether that other table was in the same room or in a different room, right? Because what would happen is, as soon as you put it down, they would ask you, you know, or picked it up, they would ask you, which one are you carrying, right? Or if you walk through a doorway, what shape are you carrying?
Mm.
And if people walked through a doorway, they were, you know, much, much less reliable. They had a tendency to forget the very object they had just picked up. Right?
Yeah.
So, and they even had people, and this is where the sort of context and cue dependency of some of this is important. You know, there's a principle called encoding specific principle, which is that the idea that, you know, the context is terribly important for remembering things. So you're going to remember why you went into the other room when you go back to the original room and you see, you know, whatever you were going to stimulated you to go leave and go into the other room.
Mm.
So, but, you know, even so, the doorway was playing an effect. So they'd have, in the magic of virtual reality, people leave the room, go into another room, and then go into, through another doorway, into the same room originally.
Yeah.
Right? And they were no more better at remembering the object in their in sort of mental backpack or their virtual backpack than they were if they were in a new room. Right? So clearly, it wasn't just the context and the change of context which was doing it. It was the doorway effect itself.
Right. Right? Okay.
So, now, from doing boring video games, they went to boring real life games. So this is sort of the LARPing of psychological experimentation. They apparently had more rooms than we do in politics, but they got people to carry actual shoeboxes with objects in them. So they go into a room, you know, an actual room, actual people, put an object in the shoebox, and then walk to another table and take the object out and put another object in the shoebox, or to walk through a doorway. And again, real doorways, real shoeboxes, real objects, people were much less able to remember the object they had just put in a shoebox, when they went through a doorway.
That's extraordinary.
It is, and it's very, very simple. And so, you know, memory really is incredibly complicated. So you have short-term memories, which are physical traces. They are sort of neurons which have fired together, and if they happen enough, they sort of bond together. But again, this is an actual trace. Again, Aristotle thought that basically all this sense data would make sort of impressions on your brain, which you could then scrutinize. Now, Wittgenstein argues convincingly against this, but there is something to this. There's a physical trace which is left, and because the neurotransmitters, which are the chemicals and electricity sort of which, set up these synaptic connections between neurons, are a little spent after that. The memory, the trace fades fairly quickly. And so, first of all, it's helpful to reinforce it. It builds back up again and you can have more memories. But then there's the process of consolidation, which brings it into long-term memory, which is, again, a very different sort of thing. There are all sorts of ways this can go wrong. There can be interference. Old memories, refuse to budge, right? New memories disturb your old memories because you have to retrieve these somehow in the future. And again, this is all... A lot of knowledge is required before we know how this works, a lot of experimentation. But the whole it's also easy to remember stuff which makes sense.
Yes.
And so when people are remembering, they very frequently reconstruct the memory. And this is something 19th century psychologists knew about. You have to reconstruct the memory so that it makes sense, but of course, subtly changing it in many ways. And so we should be sympathetic to people who misremember things which you'd think they'd really, really remember. Not only do we have lots of psychological motivations to remember things differently, right? To remember that my crowd was the biggest in presidential history, for example, right? Just out of the top of my head, to misremember things. But when the whole process involves trying to make sense of our world, including through our memory, because without memory, we really would just be existing in the now.
Right? Yes.
So although we're all basically goldfish when it comes to short-term memory and walking through doors, not that goldfish walk through doors. If you carry a goldfish through doors, who knows what happens?
But. Yeah. But that does beg the question, why doesn't that happen every time? Every time you say, I must go into the sitting room to get my keys, that you walk into the sitting room and go, why did I walk in here? We'd never get out the door that way.
That's a very, very good point. So, of course, these memorizing or remembering things when you go through a doorway is less reliable. But, of course, most of the time, it's going to be reliable. And this is how the system works. So, for most of the time, your brain works. This is very helpful for your brain. If you're walking around somebody's office with a box with a weird shape in it, you're focusing on, what is the scientist doing anyway? You're focusing on walking. I mean, a lot of this has to do with the movement. You don't want to run into things. Your brain is doing lots of different things. And it's very helpful for you to have times when you purge previous events on a cue, like changing rooms or changing environments, and putting them into the sort of storage pile. So most of the time it works. And again, most of us, I'll walk out of here and I won't be like, why am I outside of the studio? And I'll walk back in, which would disturb you, I'd say. But, so most of the time it works, but this is this is the functional part of your brain, sort of just occasionally, going, not working particularly well because it works pretty well. I guess is the answer to that.
Okay, so so is this analogous or exactly the same as if you tie a piece of string in your finger or write X in your hand? And
so the second half of the same question, this is from a listener, is, what if I put an X on my hand? Everyone might have their own sort of things. Why can I remember what it was for, right? And of course, classically, everyone used to tie a piece of string to their index finger. Now, in totally unreliable chat boards on the internet, some people claim things like that comes from a time when people sort of for bogus medical reasons would wear, claws and strings tied around parts of their body which were in trouble, and this would keep the thought in. This is not either historically or medically verified, and I tried. Other people have said that the index, and again, these are doctors of nothing, that the index finger is particularly well connected to the hippocampus. And I tried to investigate this as well. The hippocampus are two sort of mirrored seahorse shaped, and that's where they get their name, pieces of the brain where memory really takes place. And it is true that a lot of experiments I looked at involving the hippocampus do involve people using their index finger to point at things or to trace things or whatever. So some people, although I'd like to see it in a journal article, frankly, claim that the index finger is tied in some serious way to the hippocampus where all this stuff is taking place. In any case, there's a reason why all of these reminders, like an X or a dot or a string on your finger, of whatever finger, have been replaced with apps. I mean, these private reminders to remember, you know, things which get us to remember to remember, right, are grossly inferior to your phone saying, turn on the heating or don't buy any more tofu, right? Or buy this, buy that. And you know, because, you know, you're the only person who really knows what the code is. And again, you have a tendency to forget. Again, I was hoping to bring in Wittgenstein on private language, but it's enough to say it. So Wittgenstein said that you couldn't develop a system of symbols which only you could understand, which refer to these inner sensations which you're scrutinizing. And that, in fact, language and meaning is an essentially sort of public, practice-based, collective thing. So, and that's why these reminders are so rubbish.
And I forget now who it was. There's a living philosopher who has a whole shtick about, not more than just a shtick, but...
It's mostly shtick, actually, philosophers do.
But that things like apps, that this is your mind, that the idea that your mind ends at the borders of your skull is a nonsense, because in terms of writing and communication, but because of the internet and because of mobile phones, that our minds are kind of far more interactive all the time.
You might be thinking about Floridi, who believes in information ethics. And I know all of this because of a thesis I recently was the examiner for, which is the idea that sort of everything in the infosphere has value, man, and our information, we are our information. And so if they steal my really boring personal data somewhere, that's like a little bit of me there, right? And in the past, we talked about ghosts and souls and so forth, which are in some ways information, their arrangement of things. Of course, I'm pretty attached to the information, which is my living, breathing body, but, you know, and not so much to my dental records from 1983. But, you know, hey, that's the thing. Even without the groovy we're everywhere on the internet, man. information is really, really interesting. It's interesting that, for example, and this is why radio is great, heard information is actually easier to remember. People will remember, I hope, what I'm saying right now better than if I was on television saying, perhaps, right? On the other hand, reading is actually better than hearing, because reading is a very, very active process. And that's why television and reading are different, as is surfing Twitter and reading are also different. Reading is a very active piece. And so actually things which are read tend to spend more time in the memory.
So someone says, does that make memory a form of self-delusion?
It's certainly a potent tool for self-delusion, right? I mean, again, think about how much of our identity is based in memory and, you know, the selective culling of memory.
If you remember things in your long-term memory, you're actually remembering the memory rather than the actual thing that prompted that memory.
Sure. It's in the past. We can't go back there, right? Yeah. I like to say I've read all of Proust. I've read the first 100 pages of Proust several times.
Yeah, that was the gist of it, really.
But the gist of it is, memory's complicated. but in any case, no, that's true. I mean, all memory is, you know, because we can't go and scrutinize the events or the arrangement of objects themselves. Again, we can visually only basically remember up to 12 objects for 100 milliseconds. So there are real limits to our physical ability to engage with the world. And that's why, and we can't go back in time and, you know, feel like it was like to be a boy in Canada in 1970, in my case, right? We are memory, right? Like, you know, everything we are is this attempt to take all these memories and bring them together into what is ideally some kind of coherent whole we can live with. Now people who remember everything, and I'm pretty sure you've talked to some on your show.
Yes, right? It's horrific.
I mean, this is
them.
A pathology. Yeah. It's people who really, really have that access to everything they've ever seen find it quite agonizing by all accounts.
Yeah. But we're intersecting with our memory all the time, given that we're at the end now, Graham, and everything that happened prior to this is now a memory, the few shards we can recall.
It's true. We're interacting with our memory all the time, and again, you know, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for our memories. We wouldn't, you know, our entire way of interacting with the world is based on all of the memories we have up to now, and that, in a way, is why I think children are so fascinating, even though they have memories going way back and including possibly into the womb. Once again, we tread into dangerous waters here. But at the same time, you know, they have a capacity to sort of reinvent themselves and to sort of live in the now, which we lose as all these memories build up in us.
Graham, I'll never forget you anyway. Graham, thank you very much.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland.
Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.